Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Engineering Entrepreneur Podcast. This is episode 154. And as always, in the past, present, future, this is your host, Scott Tarsi, and my main business is CADDesignHelp.com. Please go to the website, sign up on the email list, and that's you get a free PDF. In addition, you will be updated every time we do a new show. Check out my online course, How to Become an Engineering Entrepreneur. I've had a few people take that, and they've had quite a bit of success starting their own business. Review on iTunes or whatever podcast app you use would be great. The more reviews I get, the more the show will grow. And the last intro thing for me is for any feedback. I'd love to hear what people think of the show, different guests they might want to hear. I never hear from anybody, so I don't know if I'm making what people want to hear. I guess I'm making what I want to hear. But yeah, my email is info@cadesignhelp.com. 2 D's in there. All right, I guess this week is Emma, let me see if I'm pronouncing this right. Shamir Tamir, is that right?
Close enough. Emma Shermer-Tamir.
Shamir, okay. And she is the CEO and co-founder of Marketing by Emma, which is the top-rated e-commerce and Amazon copywriting firm that has worked for many of the top 100 Amazon bestsellers and I don't DTC, direct-to-consumer, I assume, brands. Emma, thanks for coming on the show. I guess we'll start with, I'm reading your background. I don't really know what copywriting is. I've heard of it, but I don't really know what it is and why is it important. Let's jump into that first, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you for having me. Copywriting is the text that you write with the intention of driving a particular action or behavior from the person reading it. So for example, on a landing page of a course that you sell, that the writing there is the that you would call that copywriting, with the end goal being to get people to sign up for your course. Or on a product page on Amazon, what's written there is the copywriting with the desired goal of having somebody add to cart or buy now. And that differs from content marketing, which is more about providing value or helping to give insights into a particular topic. So content marketing is more about educating, whereas copywriting is more about driving a particular action from the reader.
And do you think it's important, or I mean, it seems like if anybody could just write up, okay, I'm selling my thing, here's my thing, buy my thing. Like, it seems so straightforward. Why would somebody hire for this?
Yeah, well, when you are selling and competing against a lot of different companies, then the copywriting is the way that you stand out. It's the way that you communicate to customers why they should buy your whatever it is that you're selling versus your competitors. It's also helps to really clarify what makes this particular offering special, what benefits might be waiting for the customer once they purchase it. So whatever it is that you're selling, a customer is going to want to know why they should buy it from you. And so the copywriting is what does that. And the more competition there is, the more finely tuned your copywriting needs to be if you want to be able to give a fight against all of the other companies that you are going up against.
All right, let me run a scenario by you. So one of the products I created a long time ago, and I still sell it, but I don't sell it very often anymore, is the Led Zeppelin object. So this was on their album. I recreated it, and I was the only person who had it. And I don't, my copywriting was probably like, hey, Led Zeppelin fans, get your duplicate of the object here. The only one that has it, whatever. And the price was like $50, right? But it sold because I was only one. Now, I've been ripped off 100 times over, 1,000 times over by all kinds of other people, because there's really no IP on this. I mean, technically Led Zeppelin owns the IP, but they're not going to really enforce this at this point. So anyways, is there any way, because based, I would have to lower my price by like about half, which isn't really worth it at the margins at that point. So is there any type of copywriting that could be good enough that would convince somebody to buy it from me for 50, over all the hundreds of other sellers that are selling literally the same thing for 25? Or do I just have to lower my price to 25 and say, okay, that is what it is?
No, that's what's really cool about marketing and branding is that those are tools that can allow you to command higher price points. So that, I mean, that's really any premium or luxury brand. It's not that their cost of goods or manufacturing justifies the 10, 20, 100 times more expensive price point that they are asking. It's really all in the perceived value that the customer sees in buying the product from that particular company. And so, whether you're marketing your product in a way that makes it now, of course, this is all hypotheticals. I really would only be able to answer that by actually looking at your product page and surveying the competition and getting a sense of a variety of different things. You know, the other element is that when we're talking about on Amazon in particular, there is the SEO component as well. So you need to make sure that you are not just having a strong keyword strategy, but part of what is actually influencing how a product is going to rank on a particular keyword is if you're converting on that keyword. In other words, when people search that particular term and they click into your page and they buy it, the more people that do that, the more that Amazon is going to associate your product as being the best fit for customers that are looking for that item. And so that's again where the copywriting becomes really important because if people are clicking into your product, they're not convinced that it's the best option for them, and then they're going and buying one of your competitors, then Amazon is on the reverse going to treat that as being less relevant to that term, and you're not going to be able to rank as highly as you would like to. So I realize that this is getting a little bit technical here, but that's where some of these pieces become so important because a customer is not able to interact directly with the product when they're shopping online. So you need to make sure that you are giving them all of the information, not just to understand your product on a basic level, but then helping them understand why this is the best product for them. So, you know, maybe it's something that a lot of people are buying as gifts for the Led Zeppelin lovers in their lives. And so speaking to how this is going to be the perfect gift for the fans, the Zozo, that's Led Zeppelin, right? Zozo? Z?
Is that you mean like one of the band members?
No, I think it's like some I don't know. It's some. Oh, maybe that's a band that's a tribute band. I think it stands for something else as well. I don't know. My husband is a Led Zeppelin fan in my household, not me. So sorry for taking us off on a tangent. But anyway, you want to make sure that you're really speaking their language, that you're using that kind of terminology, that you're giving people an understanding of why this product is going to be a good investment of their money.
Right, I get that. I guess I have my counter argument to that is that I don't think people read the description a lot of times. Like I do, but I don't, my brain doesn't really work like a lot of people. Like for example, I buy almost everything based on price. Like literally just look for the lowest possible price unless there's a significant difference. So I wouldn't even read the copy. I just like, what's all these things are the same. Where's the cheapest one? But maybe people don't think that way. And then the other thing is I know for a fact people don't read descriptions often because I sell another thing. It's a 3D printed keychain that I literally write metallic looking plastic. And then people buy it because it looks like it's metal. And then they're mad because it's not metal when I wrote in there in the first place that it was plastic. It just has a metallic look to it. And so it's like, no one's even like, is anybody even reading this? Because
Okay,
they're not reading mine.
these are great questions, and I want to make sure to address both of them. So the first thing that you mentioned is that you just buy on price. And this is a common mistake that we all make, not just as marketers, but as business owners, which is assuming that our behaviors are reflective of everybody else's, and not
For sure.
everybody is a price buyer. And I would guess that there are probably some things in your life that you're not just choosing based on price, that there are some
Yes,
things.
very selective. You're right. There are a couple things, very selective. It's very, very few things. But yes, you are correct on that.
And so it's not even just as straightforward as all of us, choose based on price or not, but we all have probably those categories that we are willing to spend more or less on. And so something like a gift, maybe where we want to really impress somebody and we want to make sure that we're getting them the highest quality item that we can, perhaps somebody would be willing to spend more money buying a gift than they would buy be would be if they were just buying it for themselves. But it's also something where some people associate low price with low quality. And so they never want to buy the cheapest because they want to make sure that they're getting the best. And so there are many different types of buyers out there, and you don't want to limit yourself by making the assumption that how you evaluate whether to buy something is also how your customers are evaluating. And the second
Yeah,
piece.
I've always found that consumer segment really interesting, is the people that think because it's priced low that it's worse. And it's just like, well, that's like as a seller, like that's the person you want to sell to, because you could make some piece of crap and charge a ton of money, and they just think it's good and they'll buy it. And it blows my mind, because I see that kind of stuff, and it's just like, but there's not that many of those people. But man, if you can get that market, you can make so much money.
Absolutely. And it's also the thing about that too is that on a big marketplace like Amazon, there's always going to be a race to the bottom. And so there are always going to be those customer or the those, pardon me, those brands who will even be willing to take a loss to capture the market and to drive out their competitors because their
Yeah.
competitors just can't
Yep.
compete.
Yep. You see that all the time. In fact, I heard something about that with well, it's not what is what, it's these it's like private equity. What they're doing is, like, for example, they'll go into a city and they will buy up every plumber, like buy all the entire plumbing business, dry it, so they're the only name in town. And then they'll just rack up the like how they start to get their own plumbers, and they'll just rack up the price, and they basically have a monopoly in the entire city. And it's sort of like that. It's like you're gonna push everybody out of business, and then ramp up the price later once they're the only one left.
Exactly. And so one of the ways that you can not avoid playing that game is to really focus on the value buyer or on finding those points of connection, those things that the customers really care about, and then centering how you talk about your product, the way that you package your product, the types of imagery you use to speak directly to those people. And so that's one way of being able to fight against that. You also mentioned that people don't read, and that's not entirely true, but it's no very few people are going to read a page all the way through from top to bottom in sequential order. What people will frequently do is they first need to evaluate, does this product fit what it is that I'm looking for? So they want to just make sure on a basic level, like let's say that you're selling a microphone and you have an Apple computer. You need to know that that microphone is compatible with your Apple computer before you're going to invest any time doing further research or educating yourself on that microphone and whether it's a good fit for your needs. So there's that first part. And then it's also important that if there's something really important that customers need to understand, it's worth incorporating in multiple places to appeal to multiple shoppers. For example, a lot of people are more visual shoppers, so they're going to be scrolling through your images. And that means that in those images, any important details should be called out in text as well. So whether it's the metallicized plastic or it's a unique feature or the size or some other benefits of the products. You don't want to only incorporate those in a bullet point or in the description, but you want to have the most important things peppered throughout so that even the skimmers will be able to have a higher likelihood of seeing that and identifying that. And then of course you're going to
That's
have the people that just don't read it at all, but if it's really important, you don't want to just put it in one place
no,
and
that's smart. I'm gonna make a note of that. Is like to put the text directly into the image. I didn't realize there was a subgroup of people that just did that.
yeah, it's really worth actually thinking about your product images as their own standalone product page and thinking about how each one of your product images works to help tell that story and provide those key details so that if I were to only look at the images and not look at anything else, I would be able to clearly understand your product and get excited about wanting to buy it and know that it's a good choice for what I'm looking for.
Again, it comes back to thinking about how I do things. I actually read, unless it's something that I've already bought before, or I know exactly, or it's just such an inexpensive item that it's not worth reading it, like, and I can just send it back easily, you know, like a $2 Amazon item. I'll just be like, this is looks close enough, I'm just gonna buy it. But if it's anything, of, you know, a decent amount of money, $20 more, and something I haven't bought, like I read everything on there. I look at all the images, you know what I mean? Like I spend some time on it. But again, that's me. I'm an engineer. I'm a thorough person. I can't, I know I shouldn't just assume all people are doing that. And that's exactly what you're saying here.
Yes. Yeah. It's such an easy trap to fall into. And another area that can get the better of us is assuming that customers know what we know. So if you're using maybe some type of terminology or like a concept that is really just basic knowledge to you, it's not always basic knowledge to the customer. So again, going back to like a microphone, if I'm selling my microphone to a novice who doesn't know much of anything about audio recording, then if there are certain features and technology about my microphone that's important, I might need to explain those to the customer in a way that I wouldn't have to if I was selling a really professional, expensive, high-level microphone that is really only going to be purchased by someone who has a lot of experience and knowledge already. And so there are all these different ways that our minds can create these blind spots that can really get in the way of being able to do effective marketing.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, let's change the subject real quick. Just hear about, I just like ask about people's like background. Like, how did you learn all this stuff? I guess you would probably study it in school, but just give us a little bit about Emma and then we'll talk more about your business.
Absolutely. I actually didn't study marketing in school. I learned marketing by being on the job and then with a lot of self-education. So I kind of fell into marketing as a career even when I was in college and I was working at various jobs. I had bosses who would recognize, hey, it seems like you're a pretty good writer. Do you want to help us with our emails or our newsletters or our blogs? And so it started to grow from there. And then I think at some point I realized, well, I don't want to just guess at how to do this. And so I started to educate myself about all of these different parts of what goes into being an effective marketer. And I think what really grabbed me and made it something that I wanted to turn into a long-term career is I love human psychology and I just find it so fascinating. And that's really at the heart of marketing and understanding why people.
And I'm the same way. Like, I'm just really bad at it, but I'm fascinated by it. I'm really, really bad at it. Like, I'm not good at understanding, like, in the way I think. Like, it's so hard for me to understand how most people think.
It's just practice. And I would also say that another couple of skills that really helped me be able to do this well. It's interesting because I feel like, our life experiences all kind of eventually converge all together at if we are heading in one direction for long enough. And so I think I've spent quite a bit of time living overseas. And so I think that really allowed me to understand lots of different types of people in
What
many
country
different.
did you live in?
I have lived in Ecuador, Spain, and Israel.
Okay, that's quite a big difference there.
Yes. And so I think that really gave me a lot of insights into people and what they think and how they operate. And I also was always very interested in performing arts when I was growing up. And I think what is unique about that is if you are preparing for an acting role, then you spend a lot of time thinking about who that person is, what motivates them, what are their fears. And so you really have to drill down and find those commonalities that are true for all of us. And that's ultimately what marketing is as well. So maybe I cannot relate to, on the surface, the customer that I'm trying to connect with. But if I go down deep enough, then I can find some of those points of similarity, and then I can build on those from there. So in some ways, it's really like preparing for an acting role to be thinking about how to embody a particular brand and then represent that through the written word and through these different marketing efforts. Because you have to take yourself out of yourself and put yourself into the mind and motivations of the customer that you're trying to sell to.
Yeah. So and so how did you start your business?
I fell into my business. My husband is my business partner. And on our second date, he told me, "I don't know what the future of our relationship holds, but I see you're miserable at your job. I have a really large network. Would you mind if I shared your resume with some people?" And my response was, "Absolutely not. That's really embarrassing. No."
That's
And
okay. Well, that's really interesting on both sides of the way that he would say that, but also that he was probably right. Wasn't he? Or was he wrong?
No, yeah. So, he kept pushing and then he got tired of asking and fast forward to we now we're married and I was doing sales and marketing for a company and I was out of town for a trade show. And I learned that when I leave him by himself for 5 days, he just might start a business. And so he got tired of asking and waiting for me to agree. And while I was away, he began to lay the foundations for Marketing by Emma. And when I came home, he said, "Okay, it's time for the baby bird to fly out of the nest." I mean, he didn't exactly say it in those terms, but that was
That's
more or less
crazy.
what
That's the first
happened.
time I've ever heard of somebody creating a business for somebody else without really their knowledge or permission and just saying, "Here you go, you're doing it." And I mean, because it's your husband, and I guess you probably wanted to do it and just didn't want to admit to it that you said, okay, I'll do it."
It was really that I just lacked the confidence, the bravery and the boldness that it takes to put yourself out there independently and say, "Hey, do you want to hire me to do this thing?" Just was mortifyingly scary to me. And so I don't think that I ever would have done it if I had if it had just been on my own. You know, I took freelancing gigs as they came to me, but I wasn't actively pursuing them. And so I had a little bit of business going on, but he saw the potential there, and we were trying to figure out something entrepreneurial to do. So the seeds were there. It wasn't just, I was not blindsided by it entirely, but I also wasn't the one that was driving that push and making that change, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand. And regarding the name, so I mean, you're the one who runs the business, it's under your name, but like why wouldn't you do like, I don't know, marketing, the best marketing solutions.com or something, like make it where it's not, you know, it's not under your name, it's more general. Like that's what I did. Like when I started buying, I was like, well, do I call it Scott Designs? Like no one's looking for Scott Designs, but people are looking for help with CAD design. Why don't I call it CAD Design Help? So that was kind of how I chose, but like, how did you pick? I mean, obviously it you're the marketer, but I guess why, what's the reason for using your name for it?
So frankly, the name was meant to originally be a placeholder because I had filed for my business license, and my local newspaper at the time contacted me to say that they wanted to run a story on me. And at the time, I didn't have a business name, and I didn't have a business website, and I didn't have anything. And so I said, can you give me like can you wait to publish and like give me a little bit of time to create a website and to like do some of this stuff so that I can take advantage of this opportunity more fully? And they said, okay, we can give you a couple of weeks. And so I thought, okay, well, this is something that says what we are. It's memorable. It's easy to spell. There's not anything that's super confusing about that. And it will do for now. But I think as we started to grow, I realized that, first of all, I read an article that was saying that businesses with the founders' names in them are perceived as more trustworthy. I've only seen that in one article, so I don't know if there's a lot of research to back that up, but I found that interesting. And I really just, it seemed to stick. People seemed to respond favorably to it. It gave me flexibility and not feeling like we were too boxed in because marketing is really broad. And so we just ran with it. I don't know that I would use that name today if I was starting from scratch, but we kind of just went all in. I mean, my face is the logo of the business, so
Yeah.
it's
Well, and yeah, and I'm sure it doesn't really matter that much, but I've also heard, you know, and read that another reason you don't want to do that is like if you ever want to sell the business, it's like really tied to you, but your business might really just rely 100% on you anyways, and it'd be like a business that, like, even in my business, like it'd be really hard to sell this without me in it, basically, because while I have employees and stuff, like without me running it kind of falls apart, which is not an ideal place to be, but it's, you know, it is what it is. So I don't know. That's just something I wanted to say about that.
Yeah, no, if you definitely know that you would like to exit your business, then it is better not to build the brand around the founder. I believe you can get a lower valuation for that, and it's not recommended. And I got advice early on about that. In this case, I think it really operates also as my personal brand. And so I wouldn't sell it because it would be selling all of my IP of all of my content and my YouTube channel and my and everything that I've done over the breadth of my career. So that's just not the way that we've really built the business. Like, I guess I could sell off the agency piece of it, but It's really much more of like a personal brand and a lifestyle brand than like a large agency. I'm not trying to build a massive agency to one day sell, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand that. One question I had on all this is how is AI impacting your business? So I was thinking, like, after our call, like, I should update some of my copywriting. I'll just go to ChatGPT and say, hey, write me better copy for X and see what happens. But are you using chat, are you using AI with your business, or do you see this impacting you in some way?
So we use AI in our business more from an ideation and research and sort of preparation stage of things, but less in the actual execution of writing. We were talking at the beginning of the call about how there is so. Because of especially working with businesses that are in the e-commerce space, and there is such intense competition, simply using AI to do the copywriting is going to give very generic content that's not going to give businesses get that edge that they need to really be successful. So if you're going from nothing to something that ChatGPT writes for you, it's going to be better than it was. Or if it was sort of, poorly constructed, then it's absolutely going to be an improvement. But if you're really looking to dominate a category, build out a brand, have a very dialed in multi-channel strategy, then you're going to want to elevate anything that you're generating with AI by using human creativity and really making something that's going to resonate with and speak to your target customers.
So when you're doing the copywriting, or you're updating any of the things with, like, let's say, an Amazon listing, like, how do you know it's better? Like, I'm just trying to, like, make it objective, like, okay, this copywriting is better than that because of this reason.
Because, well, if it is converting better, then that's a
So
very
okay, so it's sort of an experiment. Like, you write it, the description, in a way based on past experience that might improve it, but you don't really know for sure until you test it and see.
I suppose so. However, we wouldn't take on a project that we're not confident we can have a positive impact on.
So is there only certain types of products that you guys take on because of that?
Ooh. No, well, so there are two different categories. So there's a fresh launch, which would be we don't have any past data to be testing against on that capacity. And then there are also reworking existing products. So they're already selling, but they either are dropping in performance, they're not selling as well as they used to, or they are not performing in the way that they would have hoped them to. And so they'll bring us in to see if we can help improve it. And in those cases, before we take on the work and agree to a contract, we would evaluate their product pages to see whether we believe that there is room for improvement. And if there's not, then perhaps there's something else going on. Maybe they need to dial in their pricing, or they have some other issues that they need to figure out that are beyond what we would be able to have an impact on with the copywriting.
Right, because like let's use my Led Zeppelin example. Like there may not be anything we can do from that standpoint. I mean, it would be one of those things we wouldn't really know until we tried, but there's not much we could really do, you know, because maybe it's just all competition related. I mean, I guess it's just a guess. Like, well, maybe we can improve the copyright. I mean, maybe the copywriting could be improved, but will it even matter? We don't know. Like, we'd have to do it and try because there's a lot of competition out there at a lower price. I don't want to join the race to the bottom. Like, I'm not willing to sell the product for less than $50, even though other people are selling what appears to be the same product for 25. The margin for me is too small. Maybe they have a way to make it cheaper, or they're just willing to accept lower margin. But for me, the effort it takes to make it and ship it and everything, it's not worth it to lower the price. So, you know, if I was going to go and try to improve it, I guess I don't know if it would actually work or not.
Well, there are some ways that we would be able to look and see, for example, how are you ranking on the search terms that you're looking to go after, and how are you comparing not just on price, but on the rest of your product page to your competition. So there are different elements like that that you would be able to look at and see, okay, I should be able to be converting higher. So if I improve these things, then that should lead to a better result. I mean, very few things in the marketing space can you say A plus B always equals C, but there are many situations where likelihoods are improved significantly by pursuing a certain effort. But I mean the that's why we always want to take a look at what we're discussing to be able to see what our 8 years of experience are telling us about whether this is a project that we're going to be able to help someone be successful with.
Yeah, like for example, on Etsy, I don't know if it's like the built-in tool, but they have suggestions, and one of them said something like, "If you have put a video into your listing, your ranking goes way higher, your sales go way higher." Which I understand because now, like a video shows, like you got the product rotating or just showing it like live, you just see so much more about it compared to just a couple images. Yeah. How would you find there's some SEO tools, I think, for Amazon that you can purchase, like isn't it Jungle Scout or something that tells you what your listing is?
Yeah, so there are a number of tools out there. I personally use a combination of two tools. I use Helium 10 and DataDive to do keyword research. And they give you tons of information in regards to how you're comparing to your competitors, what kind of sales estimate volumes your competitors are doing, where there might be opportunities of keywords that they're not using that you could be using that would help you expand your reach beyond what they're doing. So, I mean, going into depth in all of those is there's quite a bit. I actually just published a video on YouTube today talking about how I use both of those tools to do keyword research for Amazon products.
Cool. I'll look into this because I'd like to improve my marketing skills, and that seems like a good place to start.
Yeah,
Because I
I
already,
also.
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was thinking like my sales have been low, and what I've done in the past is I already have 50 products that I know for a fact there's not all of them people want, but there's a good 10, 20 in there that in the past have sold really well and have dropped off. So it's like my engineering side would always say, well, let's just create another thing. And sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's a lot of effort to create a new product. Like, I feel like my time would be better spent getting these tools and marketing it what I already have better, and at least getting that optimized before I go and spend more time creating another thing. That doesn't sound as much fun to me, but it's probably more efficient.
Yeah.
The engine, like, the engineer in me wants to be efficient, but I also want to create things. But I need to take a, like, slow down here and be like, why don't we just, we have all this stuff. Why don't we improve it? So I'm going to check out those tools.
Awesome. That's where it's also helpful to be able to look at things and say, okay, why is it that these sales have dropped off? Because maybe what you'll find through those tools, maybe there's just less demand. Maybe fewer people are searching those search terms than they were a year ago. And so
And can the tools backdate to say, I'm imagining all that data is in Amazon. So like, hey, I want to look at like 2016 when my sales were at the record for this product. I can say how many people searched in that year. And I'm assuming it can tell me that, like, it has all that historical data.
I'm not sure how far back they go, but I do know that Helium 10 in particular does give you historical data, which is also really helpful if you have items that might have like seasonality components to them, to be able to look at that data to be able to say, oh, okay, well, I know that a lot of people are buying this between January and March, so maybe I'm gonna push my ad spend more those months to really capitalize on that increased interest. But what you might also find, because you also mentioned that you love identifying new products to launch, is these tools can also be great for that because they can help you see where there might be higher search volumes and lower competition. And so those might be good categories or product ideas to launch into, versus if you see that something is very saturated already and all of the products are selling for $20 and you know that it's going to take you more money than that just to print and ship it, then and they might also be really great for helping you evaluate new opportunities as well.
Yeah, 100%. I lost my train of thought there. Yeah, the Zeppelin Object makes me think of that because, that's an old band. 8 years ago, there's probably was more fans because they died off. The band hasn't made any music. It's like eventually not many people remember them because there's always new bands coming out and like they don't play music. At some point, the radio doesn't play music that old. So it's like I can see how this has changed over time. So yeah, the man probably has just dropped. And plus, they're not like they were in the news for like their 40th anniversary album or something like that, and that spiked it. So like, there's a lot of factors that I agree with you. And I think before I just blindly create my next product, which a lot of times I do, I'm just like, well, I want this thing, so probably other people want it too. Yeah, maybe they do, maybe they don't. Sometimes I just go create something because I want it, and then I just list it because what does it hurt? But I'd rather just make stuff that makes money. So, yeah, using these tools to identify something in advance would definitely be a good idea. Okay, well, I don't know what else topics I had for you. Do you have anything else you wanted to mention before we get towards wrapping up?
Well, I guess I would just also like to say that pretty much all of these topics that we spoke about today, I have videos on. So whether you want to go more into the buyer psychology or how to create more effective copywriting or even how to integrate AI into your marketing efforts, I have videos on all of those things. So I definitely
So,
suggest checking out my channel, Marketing by Emma, on YouTube.
okay, we'll put that link in there. And I will definitely check that out. What is your number one tip? So all these things you've learned about marketing, what would you say is your number one tip for the audience?
Find what makes you different and where that difference also intersects with where there's an underserved group of customers and really lean into that. We often think that we just want to sell to as many people as possible, but it's actually by finding those people that are going to be really excited about what we're selling, and speaking directly to them that we are able to have the biggest growth opportunities. So rather than going broad, go specific, and it will allow you to create marketing that's more impactful, that's more engaging, and that is better able to drive profit for your business.
Yeah, okay, great. And last, the contact info. So we have the YouTube, any other ways you want people to get in contact with you, email.
Absolutely. Our website is marketingbyemma.com, and we have all of our contact methods there, from email to forms to WhatsApp. We have it all. And we also offer a free product page or Amazon listing analysis. So if you heard all of this and you're wondering whether your product page is doing what it needs to be doing, or curious about whether there might be some room for improvement, we're also happy to take a look and give some feedback about where you might be able to make some improvements. So that's also on our website,
Oh,
marketingbyemma.com/
that's interesting.
free
I'd like to try that.
analysis.
Yeah, I'd like to try that out. So basically, you just take your Amazon link and paste it into like the tool that you have on your website, and then it'll spit back like, oh, your
So
marketing
this is
scores.
actually, it's not a tool. Our team actually will take a look at your listing and give you some custom feedback about,
Oh, okay. That's cool. Yeah, I'd like to try that out on one on maybe one of my better margin products or whatever, whichever one is the one I want to focus on most, where I think it has the biggest potential, because I'd like to see where I score on that, to be honest with you.
absolutely.
Cool, Emma. Well, thanks for coming on. Hopefully we'll get this posted soon, and we'll catch everyone next time on the podcast.
Thank you, Scott. Have a great rest of your day. Thank you for having me.
All
Take
right,
care.
and record here.